Continuum foreshadows acceleration and acquisitions. ConnectWise talks about its new Lego-based strategic vision, a brief E3 roundup, and loads of news from DattoCon, including their big hit product that doesn't even exist. All this and more ahead. It's Channel Pro Weekly, Episode 49, Bill and Ed's Excellent Adventure. Hello and welcome to Channel Pro Weekly, Episode 49. My name is Matt Locke, technology editor and your pseudo-host of this fine, fine audio program. Welcome this week, as in most weeks, but this week for sure, senior news editor Rich Freeman.
Hey there. And if you're a pseudo-host, what would a real host be like?
You know what? We could only wish that we knew what a real host was like. I use the term pseudo-host because I'm also a contributor to the show. You know, like I kind of handle the tech, right. The tech stuff, but we don't have like a host that can just kind of serve to keep the discussion moving along. Like you have a host and you have like a panel of experts. I'm one of the panel of experts, but I'm also the guy that tries to keep the show going or actually stall the show by trying to derail it into funny conversation.
So people can't see it, but the entire time we're recording, you're continually swapping hats. Host hat, contributor hat.
Yeah, I actually should. That might actually help get me in the role. Maybe I should go to the store and get some different hats. So, like, I can have the host hat. What does a host hat look like? Do you know?
No, that's a great question.
All right, so I got to get a host hat. I got to get a contributor hat, which maybe would be like a hard hat, you know, that you see like a construction site because we're building something. And then I'll get one of those funny like court jester hats, you know, with the bells on the end, for when I'm being a goofball.
Three hats,
at least. Or maybe one of those hats with the beanies on top, you know, the little propeller.
And the propeller, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good stuff. So, Rich, you are on the road this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are you up to this week? What are you doing?
Well, right now, I am coming to you from my hotel room here in Orlando. I have just attended the ConnectWise Automation Nation event. ConnectWise does two big conferences a year. This one is specifically dedicated to their RMM platform, formerly known as LabTech. And then there's the IT Nation show in November, which is really about the whole platform. But we'll talk a little bit more about what happened here. Very interesting show. Not a lot of news about ConnectWise Automate, the former LabTech, but definitely news.
Very cool. Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about that after the first break. So that's cool. So you're out on the road, and that was good. Last week, thank you all to those who listened to our tribute podcast to Miss Cecilia Galvin. Last week, we are moving forward without her. We miss her. This will be kind of weird doing our first show without her, but we're going to do our best to get through it. And thanks to those who contributed audio to say bid their farewell, but because we did more of a tribute last week and not really news, we have a lot to cover. So I think we're gonna talk about Datto. You know, we have some coverage from DattoCon, something from Continuum. You're gonna talk about ConnectWise, and then E3 happened in there as well. So we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the things that came from E3. The biggest game show, like Wheel of Fortune, gaming expo in the world. So there's a few things to talk about that, and then we have some kind of our regular features. So I say, Rich, we push forward, although I've been busy, if you don't know, and I've been working on something that I'm very proud of that I'm going to talk about.
Well, talk away.
I will. Thank you. So, as many of our regular listeners know, we do four live events per year, all around the country. Our next event is in Long Beach, California. So if you are in the Long Beach area, that neck of the woods, I highly encourage you to register on our brand new fancy schmancy fully integrated registration system on our event site. So, as everybody knows, we do, I do the technology stuff. I contribute to the magazine, but I'm also our online guy and primary chief developer of our web presence. And previously, we were using kind of a hodgepodge of different tools for registration events. So you'd see our event site, and then you would go to like some event, you know, some registration site that had this, and then we had different tools for all this kind of stuff. But in the background, I've been working on building our own reg system that integrates registration with our website, and you know, we can take the reservation fees right through the site through our secure checkout form. And it's all up online, and it's working. So if you're in Long Beach, go and register using our fancy schmancy integrated registration system, and join us. So I'll even give you guys a code in order to register. So if you're listening here, Rich, we can give a code so that way you can reserve your seat today for only $99. The event is free to attend. But we, you know, we do, space is limited, so we ask that you do a small reservation fee, which we refund back to you if you attend. So, Rich, we got to come up with a code, and then I'll create the code in the system. What should the code be?
Live at last.
Live at last. How about something a little bit more? How about use code here? We'll use here. Actually, let's do this. Let's do CPW 2017. Okay, so if you go there, you register, when you get to the checkout screen, use coupon code CPW2017, and then you'll be able to reserve your seat for only $99. So it's a great value for you, and then we have a lot of awesome stuff at the event to talk about and show. It's fantastic. Rich, do you want to say a couple words about the event?
I heartily concur that it is fantastic. In fact, yeah, there's all sorts of different content. We do, I think, a pretty good job of sort of keeping the agenda moving. So you're going to learn about new products and opportunities from a bunch of really great vendors who are our sponsors. You're going to get 2 hours in our expo hall to talk face-to-face with those guys. But our sort of core content sessions focus this year on channel convergence. And, you know, if you're focused on IT services now, you need to be thinking about telco and print, and we have a session dedicated to that. We have a session dedicated to really zeroing in, focusing on security, very timely topic, something anyone in managed services especially should be looking at. We've got a session that I think is really compelling about things you should be doing in terms of the way you run your business today to maximize the price you're going to get for that business when you're ready to cash out later on, when it's time to kind of go into your exit strategy. And it is never too early to be thinking about that. And we have some great experts on stage who will be telling you what you need to be thinking about now. And then we have a very interesting, kind of unusual session we're doing this year where we went out and we interviewed some end users, some of your customers, and ask them some questions about what they like and don't like about Channel Pros, and we have sort of a panel discussion about some of what we heard and what you should be doing differently based on that input. So lots of really great content. We continually get feedback from the people who come to the show that we're giving them lots of really good actionable stuff that they can take home and actually use to run their business better. So I feel really good about encouraging people to attend. This will be time well spent, basically. You will not be just kind of taking time away from the office and the job and feeling afterwards like you wish you hadn't.
Agreed. And we also do lots of prizes and cash giveaways and all kinds of opportunities there, which is fun. Lots of that kind of stuff. So, registration is open for Long Beach, and we're also doing a show in November in Island, New Jersey. So if you're in the general New York city area, New York, New Jersey, registration for that is open as well. I will make sure that code that we gave, CPW2017, works on both of those events. So we'll go register and join us at those shows. That'd be great. All right. So, Rich, let's talk about Datto.
Yes. Yes, let's do that. Week before last, Datto held its, I guess what we have to these days call the North American edition of their DattoCon partner event. Used to be that was the only thing, only event they had once a year. Now they have a one that they do in Europe as well. So the North America DattoCon took place in Denver week before last. And Datto told me when they did their last European event back in October, end of October, that they were they're basically going to be grouping up their new products and releasing them in bunches in conjunction with those two events. So every June and every October, they're going to have a bundle of new updates that they ship. This year, they added another edition of the Cirrus product line that they had introduced earlier. That was sort of the star of the show a year ago. And I believe, if I remember right, they started out with, I'm thinking specifically of this sort of entry-level Cirrus X 3 product that they came out with. And they started out with a 1 terabyte model. They've been sort of, you know, adding additional models with more capacity over time. And so one of the things that came out 2 weeks ago was, you know, the latest step up in that line. And I'm sort of breezing past this as if it doesn't matter. I mean, for the average Datto partner, that was, you know, pretty big news, and I'm sure Datto is really excited about it. But it was two other things that they talked about there that, for me at least, were really interesting. So in January, Datto introduced its first networking product. We've spoken about that before on the podcast. And, you know, from their perspective, it all kind of fits in with the big picture. They're a business continuity company. They're going to help you back up your data, but you can't be continuously available if the network is down. You can't back up the data if the network is down. So it from their perspective, it sort of makes sense for them to kind of branch out into that field too. They added a new product to the networking line at DattoCon this year, and it's a managed power strip. Basically, a very interesting product. And I, you know, when I first read about it, heard about it, I was kind of thinking of it really in terms of the network. And, you know, an extension of that same logic I just sort of outlined. It's like you can't back up the data if the network's down. Well, you can't keep the network up if, you know, power is an issue. And so you're going to have this power strip. But from their perspective, sure, you can use it with their access points and so on. But really, you can use it with anything. And it is a Wi-Fi enabled, remotely manageable power strip that an MSP can use to recycle the power basically to anything plugged into it on an outlet by outlet basis. So this could be, you know, a huge help in terms of reducing truck rolls, right? I mean, or, you know, updating software on a server and you need to reboot and, you know, you don't want to send somebody out to do that. Now from the comfort of your office, you know, without sending anybody out there, you can just turn the power off to an outlet, start it up again, handle the reboot that way. There's actually, it has its own little kind of built-in wireless access point, which can be a huge help if you do send somebody out on site. You can connect wirelessly to the internet, even if they don't necessarily have an easy way to do that at the customer site. So just a really interesting product in general and kind of an interesting departure from what we typically associate with Datto. They're now doing, they're in the power business
yeah,
as well.
So I would not have expected Datto to get into managed power, only because, I mean, there are behemoths in that space already doing managed power. But I have to say, and I was going to be like, what are they going to do that, like, Eaton and APC and Schneider and all of them aren't doing? But you actually rattled off a few things that I don't think either of them are doing. I've never heard of a power strip that can be an AP to one of your on-site techs to get them onto a network without having to, like, actually get them onto the whatever business network that they're in at the moment.
And, you know, I would point out, because you're absolutely right, there are giant players in that power space that data was now competing with. But same is true of networking, right? And but it's very similar to what you just said. They have their own particular angle on that, and it's really, really tailored to MSPs who serve SMBs. And so it's similar with respect to the power strip. You know, that functionality you're calling out is something that an MSP is going to understand right away, and maybe some of the other power companies aren't quite as tuned into that particular demographic.
Right, because to an end user, that feature is meaningless. But to an MSP, it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And that's cool.
And I will toss this out, because if you're surprised that they're getting into managed power, and I come to think of it, I believe we're going to hear this in the interview segment that we do later, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But I had an opportunity to interview Austin McCord. We'll be listening to an excerpt from that conversation. One of the things I asked him was, okay, you're in managed power now, too, in addition to networking. Where might you be going next? And I think we're going to hear him say IP cameras could be their next the next addition to their hardware line. So we'll table that, and maybe it comes up again later. But, they're headed in all sorts of different directions, and that is a fine segue to the last little bit of news from DataCon I wanted to discuss. Because I had an article that I posted from there just as the show was ending, and the headline of it was "The Surprise Hit of DataCon 2017 is a Product That Doesn't Even Exist." And this, to me, and I think a lot of people, was the single most intriguing storyline out of DataCon this year. Austin McCord does his opening day keynote, and he talks about the new backup hardware, and he talks about the managed power. And then he did almost Steve Jobs-esque one more thing, one last thing kind of deal at the end of the keynote.
Can I guess?
Go for it.
Induction cooking.
Now, that would have been good. That would have been good. Yeah, and in fact, that would have been so good that what he actually talked about might be an anticlimax for some of the people here listening. But it came as quite a surprise. It's another sort of departure from the way that you think about data. He said basically, hey, we've got this really cool R&D unit, and we play around with all sorts of different things, you know, most of which never become a product, but it's kind of worth experimenting. I want to show you something we're kind of working on now and just get a read from you folks on whether or not this is something we should pursue. And what they showed was a VDI solution, a virtual desktop solution called Datto Desktop. And it fits right into some of the themes we were just talking about in terms of their network products, where it's really kind of designed to be very, very simple. High performance, very simple, easy to use, very attractive from the perspective of a Datto partner. You can manage it. You can manage these desktops via the same management interface you use to manage their backups and their networking gear and so on. It's all, you know, in one console. And, for all the new the real products, the shipping products that Datto announced, it was this VDI thing that everybody was talking about. And it was really fascinating to me to hear the reaction from the Datto partners, the channel pros in the audience, most of whom, I think it's fair to say, don't do VDI now, really aren't very interested in doing it, haven't been interested in doing it because they don't like the options out there. It's, you know, either too enterprise focused, not SMB appropriate, or the performance and therefore the image quality or whatever isn't good. And there were 1,000 people in the audience, most of whom had very little interest in VDI until they saw that demo, and then they all became really, really interested.
From a business continuity, if they approach this the right way, I mean, I have no doubt that Datto would do really well in VDI, especially if they tailor an SMB solution to it. But from the business, just from the business continuity story, VDI makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Almost even more so, I would say, than networking or power. But being able to, from a business continuity perspective, spin up a virtualized version of a desktop that maybe is broken, won't boot. There's no power in a building, but you can remotely serve, you know, virtual desktops from your backup appliance. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, if I remember right, that exactly what you just said is one of the scenarios that they kind of played around with on the demo, if I recall right. Yeah. So, and you know, I take McCord at his word when he said, "Hey, this is something we're kind of playing around with in R&D. Let's see what you guys think." I actually had a chance to grab him as he was going from one place to another at the show and just ask him about the enthusiastic response and, you know, from the attendees to that demo and whether it had surprised him. And he said it absolutely had. And I think it's fair to say, I don't believe, that this was ever stated explicitly, but I think it's fair to say they are going to pursue this product if they can kind of make it work at scale and you know, deliver the experience that they demoed. This is going to happen just based on the reaction that they got to that demo at the show.
Very cool. Is that demo available online anywhere?
Ooh, good question. I don't know. Not that I'm aware of, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some video up there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe we should try to hunt down a link.
Yeah,
And see if even they've got it on their website somewhere or something like that, because that would be cool for people to see what got this enthusiastic response.
Right. I will poke around and see if they put something up.
Now Datto's also offering something for free, right? Which is just not something that they generally do. So what are they doing for free?
They have introduced a set of marketing resources, basically for their partners. And this is something that they're doing with or in conjunction with a third party sort of channel oriented, channel specific marketing expert called Mind Matrix.
Oh, it's not like a person, like, you know, virtualized, Wi-Fi accessible, power distribution marketing manager named Bill
or Ed.
Or
yeah.
Ed.
Yeah. No, actually they went in a very different direction, Matt. They decided to go with something, you know, computerized.
Something scalable.
Something scalable. Yeah. A little more scalable than Ed. Ed, you know, Ed takes time off evenings and weekends and, but not Market Now, which is the name of this, marketing platform that, they created. And that was another, sort of big announcement at the show this year, is that there are now resources that you can kind of tap into to execute demand generation campaigns. And at this point, really, it's tools that you can use. So, I mean, you bring your own list of leads or prospects that you want to target and so on. They're not sort of feeding you leads yet, although they're kind of thinking about that as a possibility for the future. But you know, here's a free tool you can use to execute email marketing campaigns. There's all sorts of sort of surrounding, supporting training resources, collateral, et cetera, that go with that. You know, nice new tool for the Datto channel.
Yeah, I agree. And what a great time to be Datto, and a great time to be a Datto partner, because, you know, there's this thing out there called ransomware that has everybody up in arms, and business continuity is a big part of fighting off ransomware. So all your customers have heard of it by now, and if they haven't, they need to. So if you have customers who aren't planning, you know, they don't have a good backup strategy or an easy way to implement that backup strategy, business continuity is something that you can sell them and makes a lot of sense. Like, hey, it's great you're backing up your data, but if you actually do get hit by ransomware, how many computers do we have to restore? How long is that going to take? Solutions like this, I mean, you can do all that stuff, but they can still be doing business right there. So take advantage of those free marketing tools, which you can use anytime, and you don't have to wait for Bill or Ed to be there. You can just go and use them.
Ingenious.
It is ingenious. Very smart. Very smart. Cool. Well, that sounds like it was a good show. DattoCon is always great. Now, I want to say that I'm glad that you covered the one here. I will take one for the team.
Uh-oh.
And I will be happy to cover the one in Europe.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, well, get in line. That was pretty much what I said to their PR guy. You know, just set me up, man, and I'm there. I am happy to cover whatever you've got going on.
Where do they hold that one?
I believe it's in London again this year.
You know what? I think we can make a case that both of us need to be there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We can do a little Datto Expo and a little bit of English pub crawl at the same time.
Yeah, we can bring Ed along. he's not working, apparently. So,
well, he's probably working the show, so good. We get Ed. Not Bill, though. He's kind of a pain in the butt. We'll just take Ed with us. Oh, awesome. All right, cool. Well, that's a lot to digest for part one. So why don't we take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of ConnectWise and a little bit of E3. So stick around. We will be right back. All right, and we are back with part two of Channel Pro Weekly, coming hot off. Oh, we were supposed to talk about ConnectWise or a Continuum before the break, and we didn't.
Well, that's okay.
That's okay. We spent a little bit longer on Datto than I think we'd expected. So why don't we talk about Continuum?
So Continuum, which obviously is in the same market as ConnectWise, managed services software, RMM, BDR, they do network operations. They have a network operations center that you can tap into on an outsourced basis. They have new ownership as well now as of last week. So the backstory on Continuum, and it's a familiar name here for people who have been in our world, our corner of the industry for a while. Once upon a time, there was this leading RMM BDR company called Zenith Infotech. You remember those guys?
I do. They made great TVs. No, that wasn't Zenith Infotech. That was a different Zenith. Never mind. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. They were doing managed services software. They kind of wanted to get into the cloud computing, kind of private cloud computing space. And so they spun off the RMM piece of their business as a separate company that was acquired by a private equity firm called Summit Partners. Summit rebranded the company Continuum, and that is the Continuum we know today. And now, as of last week, Summit sold the business to Thoma Bravo, which is a private equity firm with a lot of investments in the technology space, kind of a bigger, somewhat more sophisticated firm. So from Continuum's standpoint, this is kind of a logical step in their evolution. They wouldn't put it this way, but they kind of outgrown Summit in a way, and it was time to step up to a company like Thoma Bravo. The thing that immediately grabbed my attention when I heard that this was about to be announced is that Thoma Bravo owns SolarWinds, and with it, SolarWinds MSP. And so immediately start thinking, well, what's the story there? Are they going to, you know, combine these companies? Are they going to segment the market out somehow? Are they going to try to rationalize these investments? I had an opportunity to speak with Michael George, the CEO of Continuum, the day this news officially went public. Naturally, I asked him about that, and he said there will be no change. You know, as far as he knows, certainly there will be no change for either company.
Well, you know, I think change is due because SolarWinds hasn't changed their name this year. So yeah. We need another brand name for them.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Because if they don't rebrand again, it's going to throw, you know, hundreds of business card makers out of business. They count on this.
Let's do a little brainstorming session. If Continuum and SolarWinds were to be combined, what would the names be? What are possible names? We could do Continuwind.
Yeah, Continuwind is good.
Solarum.
Yeah, not bad.
Solarium. I like that. What else could they do? We could pull something from the past and we could call it Continua GFI Max.
And what was the Hound Dog was the predecessor to GFI? Why not toss that one in there, too.
So let's see. Houndwind.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you want to go there from a marketing standpoint.
Windhound.
Okay, sure.
A little bit better backwards. maybe we could... What is continuum backwards? That would be... Mutsiuka, or something like that. That's a little hard to pronounce, but
yeah,
some people
might
like that. Listeners, come up with... Okay, let's play a hypothetical for next week. If you were to come up with a new combined brand company name for some hypothetical merger of Continuum and SolarWinds MSP, let's get your best guesses for names. So shoot us your thought on Twitter or on Facebook, or send us an email, podcast@channel4network.com. And if we get some good ones, we'll talk about a few of the best submissions next week. That'd be fun. Anyway, continue. I didn't mean to completely...
But
that was a fun thing to think about.
Yes. So basically, what George told me is there is no plan, there is no master plan or strategy on Thoma Bravo's part to combine these companies, turn them into one, to do anything differently, really. But the way he positioned it is they invested in SolarWinds because they like that company, and they want that company to keep doing what it's doing, and same with Continuum. They like the way it's got, so they're not going to mess with their investments, basically, by making these radical changes to either company. We will see. We will see. I mean, you could make the argument that if you own both of these companies, do you really want your two businesses competing with one another? I don't know.
Ding, 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 ding.
Might not be the way they look at it, but we shall see.
We shall see. I know that if I bought two ice cream stores in the same town, I don't want them competing against each other, right? So let's we will have to see, I guess.
You're right. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, interesting. All right. We'll see how that goes. Okay. So Rich, you are at ConnectWise.
Yeah.
So why don't we go ahead and move forward into that story? So you've got a couple things to chat about there.
Yeah. It's definitely been an interesting show here. So this is their RMM show, their lab tech show, basically. Last year at this time, they used this event to launch a new version of what was still called lab tech at the time. They didn't do that this time. They have version 12 of the product, now known as ConnectWise Automate. It goes into pilot in August. They are sort of thinking that they would like to have it in general availability no later than October, but, you know, it ships when it's ready. So they didn't really have a whole lot to say about ConnectWise Automate at Automation Nation this year, but there was lots to talk about just in terms of their strategic vision. I had a chance to sit down with their chief product officer, with Arnie Bellini, the CEO, with Gavin Gamber, who's in charge of their channel relationships. And I got a really good sort of overview of where they're going. And it's kind of intriguing, actually. So if you look at this managed services software space, RMM, PMM, PSA, all that kind of stuff, if you look at that from 10,000 feet and try to identify some trends that have been going on in recent years, I think you would say that the creation of product suites is one of the big things that has happened in that area. And ConnectWise is the pioneer there. They were really the first people who said, you know, we've got a PSA product and an RMM and a quoting solution, and let's sort of package those together. We'll call them the ConnectWise Business Suite. It'll sort of be the MSP's version of Microsoft Office. Better together, you know, we'll integrate them. Since then, you know, so last year, Kaseya, which was an RMM vendor originally, they acquired a PSA company and began building out a suite. Autotask in recent years, you know, they started out in PSA. They too bought an RMM platform last September, I guess it was, they introduced a BDR product as well. So you're seeing other companies kind of construct these suites and essentially own the different pieces of the MSP's pie, of the, you know, the, own the different functions that an MSP needs to perform to run their business. And it's not as if ConnectWise is, you know, walking away from that model, but if you talk to them about their strategy, their vision for how they kind of want to move forward from here, it really isn't about adding new, you know, creating or adding new products, getting into new markets like, say, BDR or security. They insist that their vision is very much to do what they do best and what nobody else will do, and we can maybe circle back to that a little bit. But beyond that, what they want to do is integrate with third parties, with you know, the companies that really, really know BDR better than ConnectWise does or can or really wants to. And so they're doing two things that are kind of interesting. And one of them is they're putting a big emphasis right now on new APIs. So they're just beginning to roll out these new REST APIs that are going to enable the ConnectWise products to interact on a much more tightly integrated kind of basis with these third-party solutions. And in fact, ConnectWise Automate 12, which, like I said, pilots in August, that will be the first version of that product with one of these REST APIs. The other thing that they're doing is they are adopting this sort of microservices development strategy. So essentially, it's like they're taking these big solutions that they have out there now, and they're pulling them apart and stripping out the different components so that they can be individually accessed, both by ConnectWise itself in its products and by those third parties, by the ISVs out there. So just to give you an example, there wasn't a ton of product news at a ConnectWise Automation Nation this week, but the one product announcement they made is that there is now a standalone version of Cloud Console available. Cloud Console is their cloud management solution for managing Office 365 and Azure. In the past, the only way you could use it was if you had their PSA solution too, because it relied upon billing functionality and account management functionality that was in ConnectWise Manage, their PSA platform. They have now pulled that functionality out and turned it into these two discrete microservices that Cloud Console, as a standalone product, can now tap into. And so if you're somebody who wants a Office 365 management tool, but you either already have a PSA system or you're not really doing managed services per se and you don't need a PSA, whatever, you now have the option of buying Cloud Console as a standalone product because there are these microservices out there that enable it to run standalone. And they ConnectWise plans to do more of this standalone kind of software development where stuff that you can only use in conjunction with the suite right now, you will have the option of using it on your own as well. And from their perspective, that opens up a new market for them. So, you know, people they might not have been able to do business with before, they can do some business with now. And it also gives people they're not doing business with now entry points into the suite, into the platform. Right. So they sell Cloud Console to somebody, and that person begins to realize that, boy, this, I like this product, but it would be even better if I had an integrated PSA or RMM or both or whatever. And so maybe, you know, land and expand, basically start out small and maybe sell some more products.
Yeah, cool. That is definitely a strategic shift for them. Although I have to say, I'm slightly disappointed because I got really excited when I read your headline. So what your headline is?
Let me just take a peek here. So the headline is ConnectWise's strategic vision is all about Legos.
Okay, now explain to me what you mean by that, because I got to tell you, I was thinking like, oh, cool, ConnectWise's products are going to come in a box and you have to like put them together, or that all of their documentation was going to go without words, and it was going to be huge books with lots of little pictures on how to do everything.
Which is not out of the question. You know, and you could drop that in the suggestion box. Actually, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because that is one big, really big piece of the vision that I didn't even touch on, which is that, you know, way down the road, this is not something that they're thinking they're going to be doing next year or the year after, but the direction that they're headed in is this idea that, you know, if you're an MSP, you have slightly different needs than if you're an Office 365 reseller or a VAR, or if you're a telco guy, or if you're a print guy. There are all these different sort of technology service provider markets out there. They all have different needs, different ways of doing business, different business models and preferences. And what ConnectWise ultimately wants to be able to do is provide this platform of piece parts, Legos, microservices that they develop, solutions from their third-party ISV partners. And you, as a channel pro, will be able to decide, I want to use this, 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 and this. And because, you know, they've got these REST APIs out there, and everything is designed to work with everything else, these Lego blocks are all just going to snap together. And you're going to be able to put together your personal Matt Whitlock ConnectWise platform that just has the stuff you need and want, and is sort of tailored to your business. And yet, as your business grows, as new technologies come along, as you add new services, you can just kind of keep snapping on more blocks to that foundation you put in.
Now, are they gonna tie that in with like a movie franchise?
Brilliant, brilliant idea. You know, you are on fire today, my friend.
I'm telling you. I mean, a Star Wars tie-in with ConnectWise. You know, everything is themed, and you put your little blocks together online. I think there's a good tie-in there.
Yeah.
A run in Happy Meals at McDonald's.
Yeah.
I have a marketing degree, believe it or not.
I do believe it. Do you remember the GPA on that?
I'm staring at my degree right now, and I'm thinking, why did I even go to college? What did I learn? No, fun stuff. That sounds cool. I think anytime you can make your product more accessible and more customizable, and very importantly, not always necessarily work against integrated solutions, but can work with and snap into those solutions, is a great strategy. So I'm excited for ConnectWise. I think it's awesome.
It is a big, ambitious vision. I mean, it is a vision. We throw that word around a lot in this industry, don't we? But I mean, this is a vision.
It is. But it's a good one. I will be interested to see if by next year they're starting to put that vision into place.
Right.
Because I will tell you this as someone who works with APIs and those kinds of things, it is really difficult to take a product as cohesive as ConnectWise's suite and componentize it and still have it all work together just as well using API calls. So I wish them a lot of luck.
It's an angle to this story worth keeping an eye on.
Absolutely.
Because a vision is one thing, but the execution is another. So it'll be, you're right. It'll be interesting to see if everything performs as smoothly as it did before when it was, you know, all in the same box.
Yeah. Cool. Well, speaking of boxes.
Yeah, and fun.
Yeah, boxes. And not necessarily Legos, but just boxes. E3 happened.
Indeed. Now, I'm trying to remember, that last week or the week before? Week before.
It was, I think the week before.
Yeah.
Last, somewhere in that neighborhood. But, so I will say that we look to E3 not because it's a big partner thing, but only because those who are at least in the system builder category look to E3 for a couple things. One, to see what kind of competition consoles are going to have on their business markets. And also to look at the upcoming games that are going to drive interest in PC gaming, right? So there is still a relevance to this. Plus, I also just really like to talk about video games because Unless you didn't know. You know that I kind of like games.
I've heard this.
It's true. And I am mostly exclusively a PC gamer these days. I very rarely bust out a console anymore. But I like to follow the console markets and follow the games. So I think we just kind of spent a couple minutes chatting about some of the things that happened. And we were talking about boxes. And Microsoft finally unveiled the final version of their upcoming upgrade to the Xbox One, which they dubbed the Xbox One X. So this kind of went with a code name before. But what Microsoft is doing here is kind of interesting. I would actually have liked to see a little bit stronger push with them to explain why they're going to keep two consoles on the market. But I think Microsoft might be onto something here. So right now they have the Xbox One, and the Xbox One came out several years ago. It's a good console, but was a little bit underpowered compared to some of their competition, and has not fared as well against Sony in the console market. So they are releasing kind of an upgraded version of the Xbox One called the Xbox One X. It's powered by a custom octa-core processor, AMD GPU, 12 gigs of GDDR5 RAM, and is backwards compatible with Xbox One software. So you have kind of two Xbox Ones in the market now, one entry-level and now one high-end. Now, the high-end one, faster load times, better anisotropic filtering, 4K, native right. 4K gaming, and super sampling in there as well. So I think what Microsoft is doing is taking a little bit of a nod to the PC gaming market, where you have entry-level gaming PCs, and you have high-end gaming PCs, and then you have these games, the software in the middle. And games don't have to be so linear in terms of their performance. Games are written to work on a wide variety of hardware and to perform better on higher performance hardware than on lower performance hardware. Makes sense, right? So mm-hmm. I think having two Xboxes out there, one that serves the entry level who may not care about 4K gaming or the possibility to maybe run some kind of future VR thing or that kind of stuff, will be very happy at a lower price point. But those who want to do the next level of gaming, want 4K, want all this better performance, they can buy that console and then all the software that's out there, well, I should say at least future software that is written, will be written to take advantage of the higher end specs, but still also work with the Xbox One just as it had before. And I'm also willing to bet you're going to see a lot of game makers put some patches out there that will allow the Xbox One X to have higher performance settings for a particular game, even if that game wasn't built when, or you know, written when the Xbox One X was even existed, right? So go back to like an older title, like the very first Destiny, for example. They could release a patch that the Xbox One X can understand, and then the Xbox One X can take that and then run the game with different anisotropic filtering settings, different resolutions. You know, do some changes with that original game to run it better. So I think that's pretty cool. Price point on that is $499.
I was just going to ask.
Yeah, so $499, which is expensive, but this is by far, when this hits, the most high performance console in the market. Now, what I'm also going to say too is this puts consoles in a very interesting position, because the hardware in consoles are definitely going to the PC side of the hardware spectrum. Now, there's still some custom processors and custom GPUs that these things get, but the days of power PC cores and kind of really unique custom-built processing is over, right? There's no emotion engine in consoles anymore. They're basically using x86 PC hardware and GPUs. So this, even though this is the most powerful console, and no doubt the GPU in here has some tricks up its sleeve to you know, output a little bit higher performance than what you might see in the PC side for a particular game, because games can be when you have a set hardware point, a game can be optimized to run on a very particular hardware set. But this is the most powerful console. It is nowhere near the most powerful PC gaming machine, even now. Normally, there's always this leapfrog thing that would happen with PC gaming, is that a console would come out and it would be like better than pretty much anything you get in the PC side for the most part. And then, the PC market would continue to evolve because it evolves every single day. And then the consoles would get, radically out of date, laughably so compared to the PC market. And then they would come out with new consoles, and then they'd usually leapfrog again. This leapfrogs nothing in the PC line. You could go and you could build a pretty high-end gaming PC to compete with the performance of this and even blow it out of the water. Could you do it for $499 right now? That's a good question. I'm going to take a look at the specs on this, look at what the 3D performance is, and kind of say, oh, can you build a PC that is somewhat comparable in gaming at this particular moment for $499? My inclination is going to be no. I think it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but not for much longer. So I think that is kind of an interesting thing to think about in terms of the console market, and puts PC makers who build gaming PCs in a very good position to continue to snap up market share from the console crowd with custom gaming solutions.
So, I mean, this is, how basic my knowledge of this market is, that one of the things I kind of wanted to add. So, the big storyline from Microsoft's perspective is that this new Xbox model, which used to be called Project Scorpio, it brings 4K gaming to the console world for the first time. So I'll just take it as a given that that is an accurate statement. But what I was wondering is, so how long has 4K gaming been in the PC world?
Oh, years.
Yeah, that's what years. Sort of thought you would say. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing new. Again, nothing new for the PC market. But in order to do true 4K gaming on PC, I mean, you've needed some pretty beefy hardware to do it, at least to do it with any level of high performance. So if you're going to run, high anisotropic filtering with, 4K resolution and 60 frames per second, you needed some pretty beefy hardware to do it. Less so now than you used to. This does it in a very small box. I will say this is Microsoft's smallest console that they've ever made, and it's their most powerful. So some people might say, oh, great, more Red Rings of Death. But you cannot get the Red Ring of Death on this. And do you know why?
No.
Because there's no red lights in the front of it.
Well, there you go. Solve that problem.
Fixed. Done.
Fixed.
So it's a nice looking console. This I don't think Microsoft's goal here is to compete with PC, because why would they want to? Right? This is really to answer the PlayStation, Microsoft did very, very well in the Xbox 360 era. Despite the Red Ring of Death problem that they had in the beginning, the Xbox 360 was a massively successful console for them, and really brought Xbox Live into this awesome service and profitable business model for them. And one of the only Microsoft brands that really had a cult following, especially with younger audiences. Right, most people even today can't look past the Microsoft brand from what they were in the early 90s, this monolithic company who isn't hip and cool. But the Xbox carries that cachet with people. So Microsoft is very proud of this particular brand, and they did really, really well with the Xbox One. But Sony came along with the PS4 and outdid Microsoft. They came out with a console that was smaller, significantly smaller. I remember seeing the Xbox, the original Xbox One. It's a tank of a console. It's huge. This one is much sleeker, much more svelte. But the PlayStation 4 was sleeker, but it had better hardware, higher performance. And Sony did really, really well with it and is leading that. So this puts Microsoft in a really good position to answer Sony back with some hardware that has a significant improvement over what the PS4's capabilities are. The PS4 can output 4K, but only on the movie side. It's not really a 4K gaming machine. So this gives Microsoft that particular selling point that Sony does not have, plus Xbox Live behind it, which is certainly the most popular multiplayer gaming service out there. So I think Microsoft's putting in a good position. And again, they're not killing the original Xbox One either. That stays in market at a lower price point for people who either just don't care about the upgraded features, or at least just to give people a lower price point, lower than $499 to enter into the Xbox world.
So one of the things that we should mention that this product is not available yet, but it is scheduled to ship November 7th, which obviously is comfortably before Black Friday. So it will be available during the holiday shopping season. And Microsoft was quite proud of the fact that there will be 42 titles that run on this new console right out of the gate. And 22 of those will be platform exclusives that you can't run anywhere else. And so, as well, I don't know, Matt, I know that you you paid a little attention to some of the cool gaming titles that were introduced at E3. I'm not sure if any of the ones that caught your eye are among those 42 for the new Xbox.
There's a couple there. And when they say exclusive, not all of them will be exclusive to the Xbox One X or necessarily even to the Xbox line of consoles. Some will also find their way on PC as well. Right, so Microsoft doesn't always look at an exclusive like you can only play this on Xbox. You can only play it on a Microsoft platform, right? So,
right. In
other words, no Sony or Nintendo for some of those exclusives.
Right.
But you might still see them on PC. So of the game, there was a lot of games. And let me also say, too, there are going to be 42 Xbox One X optimized titles out by November 27th. But the Xbox One X can run the entire gamut of Xbox One software. So it's not like there's only 42 games you can play on it. You can play any Xbox One game on it. And I didn't even look to see if they are bringing Xbox 360 backwards compatibility forward. But I have since you can do it on the Xbox One, I'm sure you can do it on the Xbox One X as well. So most likely you can play a big chunk of the Xbox 360 library on it as well. So it's not like you're jumping into a brand new console generation or a brand new console with only some subset of games. It is an upgrade to the Xbox One. You can play any of the Xbox One games on it, with arguably for the older ones, probably a little bit better quality just from the additional processing they can do and, you know, better filtering and that kind of stuff. But also with these new high performance optimized games going forward. All right, so of the games, I don't want to spend a lot of time droning on about games, but I'll talk about a couple that I think are going to be very interesting. So the first one is Star Wars Battlefront 2, which was originally just pretty much like a multiplayer game, but a very popular one, and everyone's been screaming for a sequel to this thing, but everybody really wanted a single-player campaign. So EA, a company who I would feel generally has a history of not listening to their customers, actually listened to the fans of this game, and they're bringing Star Wars Battlefront 2 back with a single-player campaign, but also with a lot of new things in their multiplayer system as well. And the demo was amazing. It looks awesome. So if you like Star Wars, check out Star Wars Battlefront 2. Sea of Thieves is if you like cooperative games, Sea of Thieves is a game that got shown off in 2015 and then kind of disappeared. But it somehow magically reappeared this year, and I was really excited about this. It was kind of like a cartoonish, wacky, open-world seafaring game where, you and your friends kind of take a ship out and all work together to, like, do this ship in this world where you're going against other ships, and some of your friends are firing the cannons, some are putting the sails up, some are steering. So it looked like a really cool game that made a reappearance this year. So I'm excited about that. Let's see. What else? Destiny 2 got shown off again. So I was never a big fan of the first Destiny, personally. I like RPGs. I'm not as hip on shooters these days, just personally. But I know this hit a sweet spot for a lot of people. And Bungie really showed off a lot. But it was all of the big chunk of Destiny 2 at their own event before E3. But they showed off a little bit more during the event. Some new subclasses, some new guns, and this one, I don't know, maybe this one will find that better balance that will get me interested in it, but I wasn't all interested. But I will also say that I believe Destiny 2 is coming to PC as well. So that is pretty exciting, that if you are interested in this kind of game, that but you aren't necessarily a console player, PC is an option for this, so that is going to be pretty cool. Sort of new Madden NFL game, blah, 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 football. Not my kind of thing. The Impatient. I'm just going to... Metroid, Samus Returns. So we didn't talk a lot about Nintendo or Sony. I don't think they had their strongest E3s this year, but Nintendo always interests me to see what they're doing. And they're doing a kind of a remake of Metroid 2 called Metroid Samus Returns for the 3DS. I loved Metroid 2. I do believe that the experience was a little hindered on the original Game Boy. Remember the original Game Boy? The, you know, black, green, or the green and black kind of four color screen. Did you ever have one of those, Rich?
No. Well, see, when you said Game Boy, I was thinking about the handheld thing. I had one of those.
Yeah, the handheld, the Game Boy.
Yeah. Well, the one I had was a white or gray case or something like that. I remember. But yeah, I did have one of those.
Yeah, do you play a little Tetris on it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So there was, in that generation, 1991 era, there was a follow-up to the Metroid called Metroid 2, which came out before Super Metroid for the SNES, which is one of the greatest games ever made. We can maybe have an argument about that another time. But Metroid 2 was a really good game, but very hamstrung by the Game Boy hardware, and it could have been much better. So I think... this hopefully really gives that game the mechanics and the experience that it it deserved. So, and I love the Metroid games; I think they're really cool. And I love the 2D Metroid games, as many would say. Nintendo also shut off Super Mario Odyssey, which is going to be their next big Mario game. This will be Mario's 4,875,228,000th appearance in a video game, but it looks pretty awesome.
So if you like old, does it?
Now, you know what? Mario is still, I gotta tell you, here's the funny thing about, even though he's made appearances in so many different games, when it comes to the core Mario games, the reason why they are still selling and why people still want them is because they are always innovative and fun. Right? So, and very, very few Mario games have not been at least that. So I think, another Mario title is... everyone's excited about it. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they be? Sony had an exclusive that they showed off, which looks pretty good. It's a Spider-Man game. And there have been a few good Spider-Man games in the past. But this one... there's been a few... Let me rephrase it. There's been a few good ones. Spider-Man 2 was particularly good in the PS2 and Xbox era. But there really hasn't been a great Spider-Man game, and there hasn't been a really good one since that one. So this one really looks to bring a lot of the cool aspects of Spider-Man into a game that will be awesome. So it's an open-world action game, which I think the Spider-Man games really need, and I think it looks cool. So we'll have to see. I have a lot of good feeling vibes on that. Let's see, what else could we talk about? Let's talk about a PC exclusive, which, you know, you see a few of those out there. Hunt the Showdown. So originally this was shown as The Hunt: Horrors of the Gilded Age. But now, and it kind of, it's another one of these games that kind of was shown and then disappeared for a while as they retooled it, but, it has reappeared again now as Hunt Showdown. And it's kind of, they have monster hunting, survival shooter kind of formula that I think is pretty cool. So I think this one will be a fun one to look at on there. And that's just an overview. I think there's more we could talk about, but if you're really interested in gaming and the nitty-gritty of games, you know, there are websites that cover the gaming market in far more depth than we do. So, but that's kind of a quick little E3 roundup of stuff. What do you think, Rich? Are you gonna go buy yourself an Xbox One X?
Probably not, and yet, I'm sorely tempted to stop by a Microsoft store and just watch one in action.
Yeah, as you should. But again, like there's nothing that the Xbox One X can't do that a PC with good hardware can't do. So we could also just get you a little bit of a souped up PC, and you could run all the games on it that you want, barring a few exclusives.
So maybe we need to get suggestions from the listeners on my handle, my gaming handle.
Ooh, yeah. If you have ideas for a good Rich Freeman gaming handle, yeah, send those in. I'll come up with a couple ideas. Maybe we'll do that next week. All right. So that covers our E3 coverage. So Rich, we also have an interview lined up that kind of goes along with some of the stuff we talked about in the first part of the show. So why don't you introduce this person and where they're from?
Yeah. So you've heard me drone on a little bit about the news out of DattoCon, but who better to hear about all this stuff from than the CEO of the company, Austin McCord.
Who's that?
Heard of him? Is the name familiar to you?
Datto? I've never heard of these guys. Austin? No, I love Austin. He is always interesting to listen to, and he's a super smart guy and just really nice and down to earth. So, yeah, go ahead and tell us what you guys talked about here.
So, yeah, we're going to listen to an excerpt from an even longer interview that I did with him at DattoCon, and he's going to talk a little bit about the marketing platform we were talking about before and the new power stuff and some of where they're going, and take a listen to that, and then we can kind of chat about that a little bit.
I'd say there's probably a modest acceleration with the introduction of sort of the OpenMesh product line, and it's allowed us to reach some potentially different MSPs that, you know, maybe don't want to do backup or don't do backup and instead are looking at networking. Obviously, backup is still, you know, our number one focus, but it's opened up a few little extra channels there.
Is there anything at all you can say about whether or not an IPO is in your future and when that kind of thing might happen?
I think our goal is really to make sure that our company operates as though if we wanted to go public tomorrow, we could. And so we've definitely made a lot of changes over the past 2 years to really get there. You know, telling you sort of what the IPO story is kind of like asking Hillary Clinton if she's running for president. Like, I'm going to have to say no because, like, you know, that's just how this works. But certainly from operating the business, we want to make sure that we meet the same standards as any public company, and that way it's an option that's always available to us.
And so when you talk about the changes you've made in the last 2 years, that's sort of what you're talking about is...
A lot of preparedness, and you can see that in a lot of the senior team that we've hired. So we brought on a CIO last year. We brought on a chief information security officer at the beginning of this year. We brought on a guy by the name Marcus Rex. His job is really to manage, you know, all our open source connections because we obviously do a ton of work with the open source community. We recently brought in a new CHRO. So a lot of this stuff has really just been just kind of building out the team.
So let's talk a little bit about Datto networking. You said this morning in your keynote that the results have the word you used was amazing. So just tell me a little bit about the market reception that you've seen so far and what you think is driving that.
So, I mean, the market reception has been really, really positive. It's always interesting when you enter an entirely new channel or entirely new vertical, sort of how will your customer base respond. And when we sat down to even try to project that out, like, it was very difficult. We weren't sure if MSPs were going to say, no, I don't want to buy any networking gear from you, or they were going to come to us and go, yeah, absolutely, we like it. And in this case, it turns out that, you know, the feedback's been, we love it. And they really understand sort of the concept of managed networking and the idea that you should be generating recurring revenue from the networking infrastructure that you're deploying at SMBs. And so now it's really around an awareness story of making sure that people are aware that, hey, we make it. Hey, this is a thing. It's real. You can buy it. And I think about, you know, yesterday at a pre-day, I had some meetings with partners, and another partner that had no idea that we had access points as part of our portfolio. So we're really at the awareness stage and developing that feedback and really building a great feedback loop with our partners of continuing to improve those products.
So you've got 350 partners, I think you said, who are...
330 partners currently selling Datto Networking to date. Granted, I just put a Datto Networking product in 1,000 partners' hands, so my hope is that in a couple of months, that number should be dramatically higher.
And, I mean, creating awareness with the partners and getting the partners interested in selling it, and then there's creating demand potentially with end users. Are you guys doing anything to...
I don't think there's an enormous amount we have to do with end users specifically. The vast majority of the market's still running 802.11n, so the need to move to 802.11ac is pretty strong, certainly for improvement for lots of density. You look places like this conference center, it's still 802.11n, and that's why you put 1,000 people in a room and the Wi-Fi barely works. So AC dramatically improves upon that. 802.11ax comes out next year, and that's, you know, a whole other set of standards. So there's a pretty aggressive refresh cycle in wireless networking right now, and it's clear just the number of clients that an individual represents continues to grow. That you think about, you're probably at least two. You got a phone, an iPad. If you got a smartwatch, that's a third. Like the number of different things that connect to Wi-Fi is growing at an exponential rate, and so the need to have great Wi-Fi really matters.
I think in an earlier interview you did with us shortly after the networking product shipped, you said your expectation, in fact, was that the adoption would mostly be driven by existing network refresh cycles.
Yep.
And is that pattern holding true, or are you seeing some of your partners actually just kind of going ahead and...
So I think right now it's still being driven by those existing refresh cycles. And what's going to happen is that our partners get more invested in the platform, then it might make sense for them to just make sure that they convert everybody else over. But right now the focus is on taking advantage of those refresh cycles because there's just so many of them going on.
With regard to market now, so I've got to assume that's a reasonably big investment for you guys. So, mm-hmm. I mean, why the focus on marketing?
Well, we want our MSPs to grow. Like, that's the only way that we make money is from our MSPs, and so we are highly invested in their success. And this is just another opportunity for us to help them. And we're basically using a bunch of tools that we would use to recruit new MSPs, or like we can use these same tools to help MSPs recruit new end users.
Is this something that they were asking you for, or is this more of an initiative where you saw an opportunity to help them with an area of need?
It's a little column A, a little column B. And what we end up have happening is that lots of our partners come to us and they say, I want some help, maybe give me some MDF funds, something on the marketing side. But then when we say, great, we'd love to give you MDF funds, what do you want to do with them? And they're like, I don't know. And they actually don't know. And so the idea that we can actually provide them with some structured help, like, really, really matters. It makes a big difference. And then we can pre-populate campaigns and do some of that heavy lifting for them. That allows us to help them ultimately with their goal, which is, hey, help me acquire more clients. And we can do that through the MarketNow platform.
And you indicated during your keynote that, just in the early going, the testing, essentially, the platform, you've seen some pretty encouraging results.
It's helped us produce hundreds of more sales. So it's a good deal.
And are your partners bringing their leads to the system, or are you helping them find potential leads?
So right now, partners are using their leads. They're importing their list. That's where the 175,000 contacts that we have in there comes from. And we'll see down the road, potentially, we might populate that ourselves. But partners tend to have pretty specific lists and niches, and so it definitely works best, I think, if they bring their own stuff.
I want to circle back quickly to Datto Networking because we didn't talk about the managed power product. So that obviously is something that your partners can use to manage your access points and appliances and switches and so on and so forth, but potentially anything else.
Yeah. That is an outlet.
Yeah. Do you envision it? Do you think of it as a managed power addition to Datto's product line, or sort of as a...
I think of it as our first step into IoT. And that this is a thing. It's an Internet of Things, and that we can combine the AP and a power strip together, get a lot of data, hopefully help MSPs reduce truck rolls, and give them control or allow them to offer value in ways that perhaps they haven't done before. And so this is probably the first in what is, you know, an experiment in what we can do as far as continuing to sort of push that kind of technology forward. And that in our acquisition of OpenMesh, we gained a lot of expertise in manufacturing sort of IoT-type devices and working with overseas ODMs and all the other process to get those things made. And so they have amazing firmware engineers, just amazing team at OpenMesh. And this is sort of our first example of being able to play with this.
I mean, from a big picture standpoint, just like a vision kind of standpoint, I mean, where could the Internet of Things lead you?
IP cameras is a great one that's really easy to see a parallel. When we talked to OpenMesh, they said one of the big reasons they hadn't done IP cameras is they don't have anywhere to store all the video that it produces. Data would solve that problem pretty easily. But I also think that there's just a wide variety of different stuff. You could look at something like access controls as a potential answer. That, you know, the badging into doors in and out of businesses, like that's typically done by a different contractor than MSPs, and that's somewhere that definitely an MSP could pick up that revenue and speaks to an MSP offering a broader security story.
You know, when you start talking about video surveillance and access controls and so on, you see a potential basically to introduce solutions basically as opposed
yes.
to products. So,
yep.
What are you thinking along those lines?
Well, again, all this stuff fits our goal of building out services around all this. And so these are areas for an MSP to shine. They can integrate it into their existing ecosystem, and we have an awesome cloud platform to plug it all into.
But could you see Datto actually kind of creating a solution bundle around video surveillance, say, that an MSP could?
I mean, we'll create the products, and the MSP is the one that turns the products into the solution, and we want to give them the maximum ability to craft that.
All right, so that was Austin McCord and Rich Freeman at DattoCon chit-chatting away. Rich, you asked him the most interesting question that I would be interested in, given Datto's success, and that was the question of an IPO.
Right.
Which I know I am not allowed to buy stocks, but at least not in my industry, but... this is a company that really does look like they're gearing to go public at some point.
Yeah. And I, you know, the timing on that, who knows? But yeah, I absolutely believe that this is going to happen. It's just kind of hard to say when.
Yeah. But of the product related stuff, you guys touched on a lot of things, and we talked about a lot of that already. So why don't I let you just kind of give the highlights of the areas of interest of that conversation?
Well, I guess just two things that I'll call attention to. There was a lot that was interesting in there. So I mentioned that the Datto networking line debuted very, very end of January. And here we are in June. And Datto has, I believe right now it's 6,400 partners worldwide. But apparently only 330 of those partners are selling the Datto networking stuff now. And so they were, you know, pretty frank, the Datto people, that this is the sort of big challenge for them right now is just building awareness. And it truly is just a question from their perspective of awareness. That, you know, they there are thousands of Datto partners who just literally haven't gotten the word yet that there's now a networking product line. And quickly, I'll mention, because you may have been a little bit confused by something McCord said during the interview where he made some reference to how we have put the product in the hands of 1,000 partners now, so I expect that number to go up. Everybody who attended DattoCon got a free Datto wireless access point. So that's what he meant. He sent everybody home with a product from the line, and now they can play around with it. They're obviously aware that it exists.
A good investment, I'm sure.
Yes, I thought so too.
Did you get one?
You know, I didn't. I didn't.
What?
Yeah.
Austin, you didn't give Rich an AP. That's okay. We'll forgive you this once.
You know, it's probably my fault because you had to go get it. It's not like they put it in your bag or something like that. Yet there was some, if I remember right, there was like a counter or something you had to go get. So I probably could have gotten one if I had gotten in line or something. It's probably my fault. But
would you even know what to do with it, Rich? Seriously?
I would put it up on the shelf and it would look really nice.
Yeah. A decoration. like my office.
Yeah.
Random stuff everywhere.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting, so I asked him a relatively obvious question just in terms of where are you kind of going next and he said that he thought about the managed power strip particularly as their first step into the Internet of Things. And that caught me by surprise a little bit. And it's just an interesting way of looking. You know, we've been talking about this in terms of the business continuity theme. You know, from his perspective, there's this whole universe of connected stuff that Datto could be selling. And, you know, and so that's the logic behind getting into IP cameras, as we mentioned before, and, you know, access controls, right? And, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that they could do. And they have an underlying infrastructure to kind of support it all. So,
yeah, the IP camera things, I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But we'll talk about that one, I'm sure, when they show something a little bit more specific.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, on that note, why don't we take a break? I know we're kind of running up here to the wire. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to do some of our regular end of the show features. We're going to check out Mr. Joel. I got a museum pick and a tech pick real quick. And Rich, the seer is back in action. So stick around for that. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back to head into some of our regular features that we do kind of at the end of the show. So as people know, we follow our associate publisher, Mr. Joel Zaid Spinner, around the country as he represents Channel Pro at various events. And we know that for some people who are not overly familiar with Joel, you kind of wonder why we do this. But there are a lot of you who do know Joel and know how much he travels. We want to make this segment a little more interesting, and so we're going to retool this segment a little bit. But We always like to keep track of him and to give him kind of his little kudos for how much he does for us on the road week to week. So this week, Mr. Rich, where's Joel?
Well, you know, he was right here with me at the Automation Nation event. I'm glancing at the clock, and right now, I would think just about right now, he is touching down in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Back to Raleigh. What's he going there for?
Well, it's mostly going to be meetings with our boss, Michael Siggins, who you heard in the show last week. He was hoping to meet with some of the vendors in the area there, too, and he was having a little trouble getting things lined up. But he will be stopping by the mothership.
The mothership. He returns him. You know, Joel is kind of like an alien. So that reference makes a lot of sense. But all right, cool. So where are you?
I'm in Orlando.
Orlando. So from Miami to I knew it was in New York, I think, also at some point. So New York to Raleigh to Orlando to Raleigh to parts unknown.
Yeah.
Mr. Joel is in the air and flying all over the place. Thousands and thousands of miles. I'd be really interested to see how many airline miles he actually has. I bet a ton.
Yeah.
Like, he could probably, like, fly anywhere in the world for free. First class.
And, I mean, he's constantly flying, and it's 100% on Delta.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So.
That's got to be crazy. We should do, like, a little contest out of that. Who can guess his miles to, you know, without going over, like, you know, the Price is Right. That would be kind of a fun thing we could do. We got to come up with some fun things to make the Joel segment a little more fun and interesting. We have ideas. But we'll get to those down the road. But a segment that is fun that I know everybody loves because I get feedback on it very frequently is my museum pick. So yes, it's true. I have so much stuff. I'm an electronic digital hoarder that can't throw anything away, especially if it has some kind of circuit board, LED screen, or takes batteries of any kind. So I have a lot of stuff. So in honor of E3, I decided to do a video game pick. So what some people do not know is that I have a massive collection of older older gaming consoles. In fact, I was a big console gamer up until about the Xbox 360. And then I kind of got back into PC gaming, and I haven't really bought any consoles since, to be 100% honest with you, because between Steam and PC, there's very, very few console games that I can't play, and the ones that I can't play, I have 400 other games that I haven't gotten to yet anyway, so what's the point? But from the classic perspective, I have a massive collection of video game consoles and video games going back way, way, way back in time. So I've picked out a fun one to talk about this week. So Rich, I put a link in there, and if you are listening at home, go to channelpronetwork.com/MGP. And that'll take you to my Matt's Gallery Picks page, where you can see all of the different things I talk about. Rich, do you know what that is?
I was going to say it looks like a barbecue, Matt, but no, I have no idea what that is.
So what you are feasting your eyes upon is a relatively little-known console that Nintendo put out a very, very long time ago. Around the N64 era, this was Nintendo's attempt at VR. But let's not take it in VR like you can move your head and it had head tracking and all stuff. This thing sat on a desk. But it was a full 3D experience. Had two planes and a different screen for each eye. So the separation was great because, you know, you had different things in front of each eye. But the Virtual Boy was a massive, massive failure for Nintendo. It was all the color gamut. It wasn't color screens. It was like a red and black kind of look. And it would give people a headache after a while, as many types of 3D things do for some people. It had a couple of really cool games, but it was, when it came out, it was ridiculously expensive. I think this thing launched at $399. It was insane for a console back then. And it died. It died. And the guy at Nintendo who designed this, Gunpei Yokoi, if I remember his name correctly, was also the original designer of the Game Boy. So they gave him a lot of leeway to design another hit like that, and this is what they ultimately released, and it was not long before it was in the clearance bin and pushed aside like it never existed. So, and I have one of these in my collection, along with a variety of Virtual Boy games. There was only about 12, I think, that were released in the United States, a few more Japan exclusives, give or take, and I have a good chunk of them. So there you go, my museum pick, the Virtual Boy.
There's something symbolically apt about the coating of dust on this.
Well, normally, yeah, it sits on here. I'll clean it up for the picture, yeah. for the thing. But yeah, I basically keep this thing at the top of my bookcase over here in the corner, and it just kind of sits up there, and yeah, it gets a lot of dust. So I'll clean it up for the good picture, but yes, it doesn't get used much, I will say. But at least the last time I plugged it in, it still worked. So
wow.
Hopefully it continues to do so, because it's a fun one to pull out and show people sometimes. Like, I have never seen anything. I've never seen this before. Nintendo had a 3D virtual thing, and they sure did. There it is.
And it looks like a barbecue.
And it apparently you think it looks like a barbecue.
It
doesn't scream barbecue to me, but...
Yeah. Well, you have a better sense for the scale than I... When I looked at that, and I saw a little stand, and it just looked like you open that thing up and start grilling. But yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I'll take a picture of the backside where you can see, okay, like where you would look into.
Yeah.
Yeah, that picture is just from the front. So yeah, definitely might be a little grill like. All right. So also to keep the E3 honors going here, my tech pick this week is a gaming laptop. We've talked about a few gaming laptops here and there on the show, but I am going to give HP a little love this week. So I was kind of looking around at some different gaming laptops, and I have to apologize to HP. I always tended to overlook the HP Omen, and I shouldn't have, because it's a nice looking line of gaming notebooks. They got a 15 and a couple different 17 inch versions. I think maybe I got a little put off by the starting price, which is kind of low for a gaming machine, but you can customize this thing to the hilt. And you can take an $849 base price and quickly get to $2,500 to $3,000 when you start loading in the absolute latest and greatest hardware. So you can get, it features NVIDIA G-Sync technology on certain models. It's one of the upgrades you can get. 4K IPS display if you want to upgrade to that. 4 gigs or more of RAM, NVIDIA GTX 1070. You can get various different processors up all the way up to the 6th gen Intel Core i7-6700HQ, up to 16 gigs of DDR4 RAM, lots of various screen options. Great internal sound, Bang & Olufsen sound. And I've actually heard that the audio on this, normally you're going to be wearing headphones if you're gaming, but the speakers are good. A really cool backlit keyboard. Still stays somewhat portable. Solid-state drive. It's a nice looking laptop. And you tend to forget that not everybody necessarily needs to spend $3,000 on a gaming laptop. Some people want good gaming, but they also want it to be a productivity tool and find some kind of happy balance. And you can customize this enough to find whatever balance you want in a gaming laptop that looks cool but isn't gaudy, that you couldn't also take, you know, into the office and use around customers and clients. So that is my tech pick this week, the HP Omen.
Very cool. Very cool. You were discussing the specs, but from my inexpert perspective, it just looks really, really cool.
It does. It has a cool look. I love the red backlit keyboard and the little cool backlit thing on the back. And yeah, it looks not gaudy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is important. You know, so if you're selling to, you know, kids and gamers who want the craziest looking machine on the world, you know, that's fine. But if you still want to use it for business and you're a little older like me, who might want a nice gaming laptop, but not look like an idiot when you go out and talk to people. Not that gamers are idiots, but you know, you still have to have a professional vibe to you. This still has that professional vibe while also being as powerful as you need it to be to run the games you want to run. And it's VR capable if you get the right stuff in it. So there you go. Pretty cool. Rich, I see listener mailbag in our notes. I don't know if I got a listener mailbag this week. I mean, we got a lot of feedback about Cecilia, but I don't know if we want to necessarily get into a lot of that right now. But do you have anything that you got feedback-wise you want to share?
No. Nope. Nothing mailbag appropriate.
Okay. So I know, and you know, we didn't give, between the last show and today, we didn't really give people a lot of time to send in feedback on that. It took a little while to get that last show back because there was a lot of parts to it. And when I got the first cut back, I know we had more, you know, fun moments. So I took an extra day to find some more clips to put in there. So it's a really great show, and we have like a really cool montage at the end now of some of our funnier conversations from shows past, like our conversation about goats. And I completely forgot about the one where Cecilia and I you were gone, and we were talking about soup. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to that one. We ended up putting it as a blooper at the end of one of the shows, but it was just me and her, and I'm like, hey, anything else you want to talk about? She's like, no, I don't think so. And I'm like, let's talk about soup. And then she just rolled with it and started talking about soup, and it was just the funniest thing ever. So go back and listen to that, and if you have any feedback on that or want to say anything about Cecilia or have something you want us to say or want to contribute anything to that line, please do so, and we'll get those into the show next week when everybody has a little bit more time to get through that episode, because it was about 2 hours, so it was a long one. So if we don't have anything there, Rich, why don't we go into your crystal ball? Gaze into the past, gaze into the future, and tell us what has been and what will be.
Well, in terms of what has been, that is something I cover every Friday on our website in my In Case You Missed It piece. This week, we are going to be taking an overdue look at a bunch of mostly data center related product announcements from Lenovo. They had a one-day conference this week, made a fair amount of news. We've got some news out of Microsoft as well, including some updates to their partner website on the eve of their partner conference, which is coming up at the beginning of July. And then we will take a look at some complaints from a computer repair company about the new Surface laptop product, which we talked about in the podcast a few weeks ago. They say you can't fix the darn thing without literally destroying it in the process. And then we will also take a peek at a new on-demand bathroom on wheels from the thoughtful people at Charmin. Yes, only in case you missed it do you get that kind of news. Every Monday morning, my What's Up This Week piece appears, and that kind of gets you set up for the week ahead, lets you know what's coming up in our industry, which next week includes the end, the absolute very end of Microsoft's online services advisor program, that model for making money on Office 365, shuts down completely. Cisco Live user event takes place in Las Vegas. Nutanix does its user event in Washington, D.C. And then we head into a weekend that will include the anniversary of the very first TV ad ever, Canada Day, and the anniversary of Nostradamus' death. And yes, he predicted it.
Wow. Pretty cool. You know, I told you I have a marketing degree, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you that I have, like, and this is open for anybody who wants to steal this. I have a brilliant marketing idea that I came up with for a line of toilet paper, like a branding for it. And you know, when you get into the Charmins and the nicer toilet papers, you know, they have a tendency to clog. So I thought, and you just know, like, the better you get, the more likely you're going to clog your toilet with it, right? So if it clogs, that means it's good, soft, thick, wonderfully comfortable toilet paper. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I thought, why not embrace that? Why not say you have the most comfortable toilet paper known to man, and actually, like, I thought of it, like, you're going to put a knight on the front with, like, a roll of toilet paper on the sword, and it's called Sir Clogs-a-Lot.
Yeah, it's an interesting brand promise. You know, for the toilet paper user who doesn't spend enough time with their plumber's helper.
Sir Clogs a Lot. Like, if I saw that, like, hey, that if it's called Sir Clogs a Lot, you know it's soft.
You know it's soft, exactly.
And you could even package it with a plunger.
Right. There you go. Brand extension. Good.
See? You have a whole line. And you could even, like, put, like, the end of the plunger like a sword, like what they see on the thing. Guys, this is a $1 million idea here. Maybe I shouldn't say anything. This is a $1 million idea. Rich, I got to get into the toilet paper business.
It's amazing to me that I might ever have been surprised you majored in marketing.
I have other degrees too, which whenever I talk about my background with people, people are always like, seriously? You? Yeah, it's insane. Anyway, long story for another day. Rich, awesome show. Thank you. Thank you for being here with me to yammer on with our listeners. Listeners out there, if you have not yet subscribed to Channel Per Weekly, please do. Please go to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are aggregated, and hit that subscribe link. So when we do a show, it comes down to you magically. You don't have to do anything. It just shows up there for you, ready to tickle your earbuds like soft toilet paper. That was a weird one. I don't know about that one. Also, if you have any comments, questions, have anything you want us to say, send us an email, podcast@channelpronetwork.com. Follow us on Facebook. We are at Channel Pro Network on Facebook, at Channel Pro SMB on Twitter. Rich, you are on the Twitters. You are
at Rich Free.
And I'm at Matt Wetlock on Twitter. So you can follow me and Mr. Rich at those particular addresses. If you do hit the iTunes and the Google Play, if you could leave a good rating for us, and a couple nice comments, that goes a long, long way. We are hitting a half centennial next week. It'll be show 50.
Wow.
So Rich and I are going to be planning some special things to do with episode 50. So lots to look forward to, next week, and so on and so forth. So Rich, you got anything else?
No, that's what I got.
That's what I got too. So everybody, thank you for listening, and we will see you all in episode 50.